Imagine a world where your genes aren't confined to your body, but extend outward, manipulating the environment and even other organisms to ensure their survival. This isn't science fiction. It's the revolutionary perspective Richard Dawkins presents in The Extended Phenotype. While traditional biology focuses on how organisms adapt to environments, Dawkins flips the script by asking, why do genes build organisms at all? Like the famous Necker cube optical illusion that can be perceived in two equally valid ways, this perspective shift doesn't change reality, it transforms how we understand it. Genes aren't just passive stretches of DNA, they're active replicators whose effects extend far beyond the bodies they inhabit. Consider a beaver's dam. Is it merely a structure built by a beaver? Or is it actually a physical manifestation of beaver genes, as much a product of those genes as the beaver's tail? The dam creates a protective pond that increases beaver survival, directly benefiting the genes that influenced its construction. Similarly, when a cuckoo chick manipulates a host bird into feeding it, we're witnessing cuckoo genes expressing themselves through the behavior of an entirely different species. This perspective helps explain puzzling evolutionary phenomena, like why some genes appear to act against their host organism's interests. A common misconception is that genetic causes are more deterministic than environmental ones. This misunderstands genetics fundamentally. All genetic effects operate within environmental context and can be modified by other factors. When geneticists refer to a gene for a trait, they're describing statistical correlations, not absolute determinism. Natural selection creates remarkable adaptations, but never perfect ones. Moths flying into candles demonstrate this. They're using celestial navigation systems that worked perfectly before artificial lights existed. Evolution also faces mechanical constraints because it must modify existing structures incrementally rather than starting fresh. The recurrent laryngeal nerve in giraffes takes an absurdly long detour around the aorta because rerouting would require massive embryonic disruption. Similarly, flatfish faces twist to bring both eyes to one side because complete redesign would be too costly. Evolution doesn't optimize globally, but meliorizes, choosing the better immediate alternative, like a river following the path of least resistance. What appears as imperfection at one level may be adaptation at another, with selection at the gene level sometimes producing apparent flaws in individuals. Traditional evolutionary theory assumes organisms maximize their fitness, yet manipulation frequently violates this principle. Organisms can indirectly manipulate others by inducing nervous systems to work against self-interest. Male crickets don't physically drag females to their burrows, they sing to make females approach voluntarily. Brood parasitism provides striking examples. Cuckoos intercept food from host parents by infiltrating nervous system defenses. While hosts evolved discrimination against cuckoo eggs, they remain oddly blind to feeding nestlings many times their size. This occurs because discrimination at the egg stage yields greater benefits than at the nestling stage. Cuckoos employ supernormal stimuli, exaggerated versions of triggers that normally elicit parental care, functioning like addictive drugs on the host's nervous system. In these evolutionary arms races, success often depends on asymmetric stakes, illustrated by Aesop's life dinner principle. The rabbit runs faster than the fox because the rabbit is running for his life while the fox is only running for his dinner. When failure penalties are more severe for one side, that lineage faces stronger selection pressure. What is the fundamental unit of selection and evolution? When we ask what entity adaptations benefit, the answer matters profoundly. Evolution manifests through differential survival of alternative replicators, with genes being replicators and organisms being vehicles in which replicators travel. Successful replicators demonstrate longevity, fecundity, fidelity. They need not last forever, merely long enough to produce additional copies that maintain structural integrity through descent. Neither organisms nor groups qualify as true replicators. While genes replicate faithfully, passing on even their blemishes, organisms cannot transmit acquired characteristics to offspring. If a stick insect loses a leg, this blemish doesn't pass to offspring. Only changes to genes perpetuate across generations. Organisms are vehicles, entities in which replicators travel, whose attributes are affected by the replicators inside them, and which serve as tools for replicator propagation. Vehicle success is measured by capacity to propagate internal replicators. If a vehicle is destroyed, all replicators inside perish. So natural selection favors replicators that help vehicles resist destruction. Beyond mere survival, replicators promoting vehicle reproduction tend to outperform those focused only on survival. What if we reimagined the entire biosphere as an intricate network of overlapping genetic influence fields? Every gene sits at the center of a radiating field of phenotypic influence that extends beyond body boundaries. These influences travel through biochemical pathways, bodily structures, and even into the external world, affecting artifacts and other organisms. Animal artifacts provide perfect examples. A caddisfly larva building a house from stones could theoretically show Mendelian inheritance of house color based on stone selection behavior. The stones lie outside the animal's body, yet genes for stone selection are genuinely genes for house color. Spider webs represent a further extension, not attached to the body like a caddis house, but still a functional extension of the spider's predatory apparatus. Parasites take this concept to extremes, manipulating host behavior in astonishing ways. Nematorph worms make infected insects commit suicide by diving into water. The brain worm Dicrocolium makes ants climb and clamp onto grass stems where sheep might eat them. These cases demonstrate that genes in one organism can have phenotypic expression in another's body. Extended phenotypes that create genetic conflicts between organisms with different evolutionary interests. After emphasizing replicators and extended phenotypes, we must acknowledge the impressive nature of individual organisms. If we could see only DNA, we'd observe it distributed non-randomly in galaxy-like clusters, bodies, with cavernous spaces between them. Organisms are discrete machines with complex internal organization, displaying what Julian Huxley called individuality, the quality of being heterogeneous enough to lose functionality if divided. They possess genetic unity, immunological uniqueness, and coordinated behavior through a central nervous system that exceeds the coordination between separate organisms. The organism exists as a shared knot of replicator power, replicators whose beneficial phenotypic effects depend on other common replicators. The cell nucleus represents remarkably cohabiting replicators, while multicellularity enables complex organs and behaviors through embryological back-to-the-drawing-board engineering. The extended phenotype concept doesn't diminish organisms' importance, but enriches our understanding of why they exist. By recognizing that genes' influence extends beyond bodies, we gain deeper appreciation for life's intricate web. Every living thing, behavior, and structure becomes part of an elaborate dance choreographed by genes reaching beyond their cellular confines. This perspective transforms how we see ourselves, not as independent agents, but as vehicles shaped by replicators whose influence extends beyond our skin, connecting us to the wider world.